What's up, freaks? This rip of RHR is brought to you by our good friends at Strike. If you hold Bitcoin, you shouldn't have to sell it to access liquidity. Strike offers Bitcoin-backed loans with zero origination fees, zero early repayment fees, and zero liquidation fees. Your Bitcoin is securely held and returned within a business day after your loan is closed. A financial institution built by Bitcoiners for Bitcoiners. That's what Strike is building. They're doing it for you. I use it every day. Go download Strike at strike.me. And use code RHR for $500 in fee-free Bitcoin stacking. Again, that's strike.me. Use the code RHR. You're going to get $500 in fee-free Bitcoin stacking. This episode, again, is sponsored by Strike.
This rip of RHR was brought to you by our good friends at CoinKite. They produce the Cold Card Q, my favorite hardware wallet. It's got two secure enclaves. It's got a full screen, full keyboard here. As you can see, if you're watching, if you can't watch, just imagine something that looks like a BlackBerry. It allows you to create private public key pairs offline in an Aragat fashion. You never have to connect the Cold Card Q to an internet device. You can sign transactions and PSBTs remotely in the most secure fashion. If you're a Bitcoin Power user and you're looking for the best security, go pick up a Cold Card Q and go to coinkite.com. Find the Cold Card Q there. I think you can go to coldcard.com as well. Use the code RHR for 5% off. Step up your security. Get a Cold Card Q.
This rip was also brought to you by our good friends at Stackwork. If you're looking for a great way to make KYC-free sats, Stackwork has bounties. Go to stackwork.ai, find their bounties page, and contribute to the bounties. You can make Bitcoin KYC-free for completing the bounties. If you're a developer looking to scoop up some easy sats, go check out the bounties, contribute to them, and stack some sats. Stackwork.ai.
This rip was brought to you by our official electrolyte sponsor here at RHR, Salt of the Earth. You've been hearing Matt and I talk about it quite a bit. I drink multiple packets of it a day. You got to stay hydrated. That's why my face looks so good. So I'm getting buff. I'm able to get to the gym more because I'm hydrated. Matt, he's looking incredible. I'm sure you've all noticed it. You want to know why? Salt of the Earth, baby. Go to drinksote.com, use the code RHR, and you're going to get 15% off. I'm dead serious. It's made my life way better. My wife, she's right behind me right now laughing, but she's laughing because she knows it's true. She drinks like seven a day. I drink a few a day, maybe seven a day too. Matt, I don't even want to tell you how much he's drinking. It's good. It keeps you hydrated. It keeps you alert. Keeps you ready to go. Drinksote.com. That's drinksote.com. Use the code RHR. For 15% off any order.
You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
Here we are, back to levels we haven't seen since early February. Energy's high, though.
Energy's high. Do you mean the oil price, right?
Yeah. Oil price is back at, let me check here, WTI is.
Did you see the Trump quote this week? How do you define ceasefire in that part of the world? Ceasefire is when you're shooting in a more moderate manner.
I saw that. Hey, he's good for the sound bites at the very least.
The best sound bites, truly is.
Now oil is 50% above where it was when Bitcoin was back at these levels in early February. So. Should have went long.
WTI
oil.
Or Brent?
WTI.
I mean, Brent is more interesting for this stuff. Like, obviously, WTI
affects us.
You know, yeah, and market dynamics, right? Like, it gets dragged upwards, right? But Brent is the global price and is more affected by Hormuz.
Yeah, it's down to
Brent. Yeah, Brent is at like $95 right now.
Yeah. Ooh. I haven't even been following what's going on in the street. Are we getting a ceasefire or are we not?
What did I say? They're firing in a more moderate manner.
Hey, it's good to see. You know. Let me retweet this. Whoo, doggy.
What a week.
What a week is right. We were $10,000 higher last week, and vibes were pretty high.
Yeah, you made fun of me for being bearish.
I did. You gotta always be bullish.
I was listening to Arnold Old Recap, and one of the first things you said was like, Odell was very bearish this week.
How low will we go?
I'm always bullish. It's just a time scale thing. I'm bullish medium to long term. I mean, we haven't broken the, what was it, February low?
Not yet. I'm flirting with it.
Knock on wood. That's like 60K, right? Like 60K is the...
62 on the year-to-date chart is, I guess that's like the daily or close.
We never hit 60?
No, we went down. We wicked down to like 58.
Oh, did we really? 58K gang?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Kind of wild.
Saylor had to sell his Bitcoin. Why did...
32 BTC.
Yeah. Well, why that number? Great. Why that number?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, obviously, like, it wasn't significant to cover dividend obligations. It wasn't 21, so it wasn't a meme. Kind of seems right. It was $2.5 million. Maybe that was the calculation, because that's kind of a round number. $2.5 million. They were like, let's sell $2.5 million.
Yeah.
I mean, the crazier thing was retiring the converts with the cash pile that he said was for dividends for Stretch. Once again, right? Says one thing, couple weeks later, fucking changes, a complete change of direction.
And that started this time last year. Remember, it was Q2.
Yeah.
Earnings call in 2025. I forget. There's something about like when they would hit the ATM, and they would only do it in certain instances. And then 2 weeks later, he did it outside the bounds of that forward guidance that he gave.
Meanwhile, both Stretch is trading at about 5% under par, 95.52. It hit a low at 94.42. And then SATA, which is the similar product from Strive, hit a low of 96 and is now trading at 96.54. But by the way, freaks, like, this is why, like, when Saylor implies that this is the risk-free rate and that there's not risk attached to this type of thing, if it falls off par, goes down $5, goes $10 down, you just got wiped out of all your interest payments. So I think people are maybe starting to catch on that there's actually significantly more risk here than they realize. And then the question becomes, then you're just like completely in Saylor's court, right? Does he prioritize saving you in Stretch, or does he prioritize saving MSTR, or does he prioritize underlying Bitcoin? He has no obligation if it keeps falling like $50, he can just leave it there if he wanted to.
When the Bitcoin price fell, like it did in February, on February 5th, Stretch hit $93.67 and then quickly came back up to par. We haven't hit that level yet here. As you mentioned, we hit 94.65 yesterday.
Yet.
So you're saying this time is different?
Dude, we're in a brave new world right now with all this fucking orange tie shit. We'll see how it plays out. But like, we went from, you remember like how grateful we were that we didn't have to like read Fed tea leaves and stuff. And now everyone's just reading Saylor tea leaves.
Yeah.
It's like, what AI slop is he going to post this morning?
He's getting back to work.
Did you see the memes underneath the I'm retired from his like stupid ass Stretch video about buy Stretch and live in Cancun or whatever?
Yeah. I recorded with James Check. He'll be out on Monday. If you look at the on-chain data, you look at the power trend. Like,
I feel like on-chain DAT is completely irrelevant now. More irrelevant than it's ever been.
Why?
Because none of them self-custody. A huge portion of the market is in custodial shit.
Yeah. When I tweeted out last night, wrote about it in the brief this morning. We need to get back to basics. Big goals. 100 million humble sat stackers. We need to get to that number.
This is what I was trying to say last week. It's like, where did Saylor get the money to buy the Bitcoin? He got the money from people giving him money to buy the Bitcoin. Like net, we'd be in a strictly stronger structural situation if those people just bought Bitcoin instead.
Well, and I think we've talked about this before, but I think it bears repeating. Like Stretch, its whole investment thesis is that Bitcoin is going to go up. And so if you believe that Bitcoin is going to go up, why get 11% and not get the full value of Bitcoin price appreciation?
Did you see my meme? It's like the cuck version of Bitcoin, right? It's like you're watching your lady with another man in bed. I also think like the second you start with a straight face telling people that we're guaranteed to go up a certain amount, just like, I don't know, I'm a believer in jinxes.
I am too. But still, I don't think that, like, just from first principles logic, like Stretch only makes sense if Bitcoin goes up forever. If you think that Stretch is viable, that means that you think Bitcoin's going to go forever, and therefore you should own Bitcoin.
Well, the steel man of it is, like, Bitcoin could go up 30%, whatever Saylor says, 30% compound annual growth rate on like a blended timeline, and be down for 5 or 6 years. And so like, if someone doesn't want to take that risk and just wants a portion of the upside, then they would buy something like Stretch. I just think the risk reward ratio is like way more skewed than people realize.
Yeah.
And has a shit ton of fucking counterparty risk.
Eliminate the counterparty risk. 100 million humble sat stackers. $50, $250, $500 every paycheck, hit a certain threshold of sats held on an exchange, sweep it to cold storage, learn how to use the tools. We're getting back to basics here at Rabbit Hole Recap. We were a fundamentals, how to use the tools podcast for many years. And not that we've been forced, but conversation has shifted towards the orange tie regime. We're going to get back to humble sat stacking. You did a really good job on the podcast with Isabella. What is that called?
It was the Mara Foundation show.
Yeah.
I guess they released a foundation that was announced at the conference. And so I did an interview for it. But thank you.
The clip's been great.
I didn't realize the topic was going to be privacy. I guess I should have. I'm very typecast. But I thought it went really well.
Yeah. She's a great interviewer. And shout out to Marathon for having the taste to pick somebody like Isabel, who actually like can have deep technical conversations with people like yourself and others. And she get into the meat of what's happening in Bitcoin. With that, we'll go to Clark's dashboard with the current price of 63,240 cuck bucks. One cuck buck's going to get you 1,581 sats. We're at a $1.27 trillion market cap. We are looking at block height 952,372, which means we are 1,196 blocks away from the next difficulty adjustment, estimated to be on June 13th, which is exactly a week from today. Nope. That's a week and 2 days from today. So 9 days from today, -9.4% downward adjustment. It's looking like right now blocks have been coming in at 11 minutes and 2 seconds on average since the last retarget, which happened last week. We are looking at 3,587 transactions in Clark's teeny weeny mempool. If we go over to mempool.space, we'll see
that Wisden team have 104,028 transactions in their mempool, and transaction fees pumping right now. 3 sats per V-byte if you're looking to get into the next block. 2 sats if you have a medium priority, and 1 sat if you have a low priority. That is the state of the network. Miners hurting right now. Let me pull up the mining mining hash rate dipping down. Well,
below. Not the ones that pivoted to AI.
Are they miners anymore? No.
Fair enough.
Yeah, it looks like we're dipping down to hash rate levels not seen since late January, early February. 24-hour hash rate at 753 exahash.
Is it a mining death spiral?
No, we know the mining death spiral will never manifest because of that beautiful thing called the difficulty adjustment. Yeah, it is hard. I mean, that's a big topic of the week. AI sucking the sales out of Bitcoin. Taking all the energy, taking all the capital.
Jason Calhoun his tweet, living rent free, man.
If you're in crypto, pivot to AI. What was that, 2 years ago?
Yeah, I think so. You know, a broken clock can be right, what, twice a day.
Hey, he gets a lot of shit, you know, but.
Unless you're doing UTC time, then it's only once a day.
Should we just pivot to all in? Should we just become an AI podcast? I got a ton of content.
We kind of already are like half AI. Yeah. It's just interesting.
It is. You know what else is interesting? It's actually back to fundamentals, back to why Bitcoin, Zcash, Orchard vulnerability remediated after coordinated network upgrade.
Okay, so this is wild. Did you follow this?
Yes.
The Zcash dev team, specifically, there's like five of them, found a bug in the private transaction pool they have on Zcash. So Zcash is like opt-in privacy. They have the transparent part of the network that is very similar to Bitcoin in terms of privacy dynamics. And then they have three privacy pools. That is like the oldest privacy pool, then the middle one, and then the newest. And they're all based on different technologies, right? And the newest one has like exploded in the amount of Zcash that is in there. These influencers that have been shilling Zcash basically shilled people into taking whatever they have and just swapping it into that privacy pool, right? So the Zottle guys, which is like the main dev team, it was previously Zashi, set up their whole scheme so that they have this mobile wallet that basically just pushes you directly into this pool. And they found a bug that was, you know, what Bitcoiners have been warning about all this time, which is the infinite inflation bug, where it's undetectable infinite inflation. Now, they discovered it, like three people basically froze the whole pool. With not good guys. Like that's not a good situation to be in, that they can just freeze the whole fucking pool. So they freeze the whole pool and then they force through a soft fork. The soft fork freezes the pool. They force through that quietly without like telling anyone. They just go to the miners directly, like the three mining pools that control everything. Then they force through a hard fork to quote unquote fix it. Then they release a post-mortem where they basically gaslight everybody and don't call it an infinite inflation bug. They call it a soundness bug. And they say they don't think it's been exploited. But there's no way for them to know if it's been exploited or not.
I think they confidently said it was not exploited.
No, they left a little bit of a carve out, but they were trying. They showed as much confidence without actually speaking in absolutes. And so... because it was a hard fork, all the wallets like don't, even their wallet was broken for a while. But all the third party wallets who had got even less notice, things like Cake Wallet or whatever, haven't been working. They haven't been able to get it up yet. So when people are asking like, oh, why like hasn't it dumped on this news? Well, it's like people can't move their shit, haven't been able to move their shit. They haven't been able to sell their shit. And a lot of them have been using like this near swaps thing, which has also been down. So like you couldn't sell if you wanted to sell. And maybe by the time you listen to this, you'll be able to. But Zcash has like the way they combat this quote unquote FUD, which I think is very reasonable fear, uncertainty, and doubt from infinite inflation, is they have a turnstile mechanism. So if 100 Zcash goes into the privacy pool, only 100 Zcash can go out. So if there is infinite inflation in this pool, which right now is billions of dollars, not everyone will be able to get out. It's like a bank run type situation. And so then they gaslight you and say, oh, well, like it's impossible for inflation to happen. Well, it's like, yeah, okay, well, you can get caught holding the bag in the fucking privacy pool. And so I expect what we are going to see is a bank run type environment. And I guess we'll find out if anyone's holding the bag at the end of the day, because there's billions of dollars in it right now.
Yeah. And the game theory is such that if you're exploiting the infinite inflation bug and you send a signal to the market like, hey, the turnstile is working, like we're only going to let out as much as went in. It's like, okay, anybody who exploited that bug can get out first, and then everybody
100%. They have full conviction to get out first right away.
Yeah.
And like I said, like the main wallet, like defaults you into it. Like this is like when they say like, oh, if you're in transparent Zcash, you're fine. It's like, okay, well you just default everyone that you brought into the system, you defaulted them into the privacy pool.
Yeah. And I think Peter Todd was tweeting about it this week too. This is one of the reasons that many Bitcoin developers will say that we shouldn't implement ZK zero knowledge proofs at the protocol level, because it's relatively new cryptographic primitives that have edge cases like the one that was discovered this week in Zcash. And many protocols, second layers, are using ZK proofs as a selling point. And I think if you're thinking adversarially, the risk on the other side is if it's not as ironclad as many think it to be, and it can enable something like an infinite inflation bug. Like it's probably
undetectable infinite inflation bug.
How did they discover it?
They saw the error in the code. Like someone was doing a security audit, saw it in the code, reported it to the main dev team, at least according to the postmortem, which by the way, isn't really a postmortem because it's still being mortemed. You know, it was like shit is still going down right now. But yeah, I mean, I think, look, we've been outspoken saying Zcash is a pump and dump. I think this very much solidifies that view. I think if you're holding Zcash, you should, especially if you're in the privacy pool, should try and get out ASAP. But like, just think of like this level of centralization that's over there. Mm-hmm. So you have to ask yourself like two things, right? It's like, okay, Samurai developers, Tornado Cash developers get the book thrown at them. Zcash has VCs backing them, US-based dev team, you know, quote unquote Mossad coin, doesn't have any issues, right? Why aren't they getting the book thrown at them? Second of all, if for like Iran or someone goes into this, and I have that in the, you know, there's a bunch of different Iran crypto sanctions aspects that Treasury has done over the last week and a half. Like what? They just tell three people, like freeze the pool, freeze everybody in it.
Yeah. We know Iran.
Like they obviously have the capability. They've just proven to the world they have the capability that they can just quietly do it if they get a court order or something.
But hey, we need to get back to the cypherpunk roots. That's what Zcash is doing.
I did a pause so that Logan can do like a proper clip out of that.
They're still very confident though.
Eight years in, I've become a professional at getting clean clip outs of Marty's sarcasm.
Let's see what this Merc guy is saying. He's very, very vocal about this. On-chain prediction markets are coming to...
He's been gaslighting people too. He's like, Zcash was never down, blah, blah, blah. It's all FUD. I mean,
Shitty if... Sailor.
if you were in that privacy pool along with billions of other dollars that were in that privacy pool, like Zcash was very much down and is still very much down depending on your wallet. And that's a whole nother question. If you want to then not only get out of the privacy pool, but get out of Zcash itself. So yeah. We'll see how the market reacts over the next couple of days. I think if there isn't a sharp price reaction here, then I think you have more proof that one, Zcash holders are more retarded than at first realized, and then second, that ownership is more concentrated than people realize. Like if there's significant ownership concentration, they're trying to pump this thing, then maybe you wouldn't see as much of a correction.
Yeah. Zcash was never down. Many block explorers have been using unpatched nodes. Happens with every network update. Fight the FUD. Josh, sweetheart.
That's the CEO of Zottle, a for-profit company that is basically the dev team that forked the whole thing quietly and froze the pool. So the soft fork forked the pool. The hard fork, quote-unquote, fixed the bug.
Yeah. What's crazy about Zcash is that it's performing this well in the face of widespread fake news attacks. No, network was not down at all. In one of the coldest crypto markets in a long time. It's like nobody could sell. It hasn't ever experienced a bull market yet. I'm still sidelined. I'm going to stay sidelined.
Congratulations.
Staying on the sidelines. Yeah. This gets to like a broader question. I think the larger crypto world is coming to grips with is like the crypto. And I know you're going to yell at me, but like I really think that the case for crypto tokens is worse than it ever has been and maybe irrecoverable. Charles Hoskinson raised.
You remember when you called P Clown World, bro? You were so fucking off. Look, people like to gamble, first of all. So, you're basically saying that humans will not gamble, which is retarded. And then just second of all, what we've always seen is a rotation of like which altcoins are like the in altcoins. Like what is the shitcoin of the day? And right now, like there are shitcoins that are pumping, right? Like Cardano's been pumped and dumped multiple times already. It's a... it's a quote unquote last generation shitcoin. I'm sure you've seen the conversations about hype, like Hyperliquid's token, Near, Zcash. Like these things, like they just rotate to which one they want to do. They also, you remember meme coins, right? Pumped and dumped a bunch of meme coins. Those don't like really exist anymore. Obviously nothing goes to zero. Once you go down 99%, you can always go down another 99%. Forever.
Guys, we have breaking news in the chat. Logan, I don't know. How do we feel about this? Logan, pull it up.
Let's see what happens. I'm always concerned when Marty says this.
Because Michael Saylor is no longer following Parker Lewis, our good friend.
Yeah, well.
Big tech alert.
This is not breaking news. This was like a half a day ago.
It was 15 hours ago.
Yeah, so over a half a day ago.
Matt Dine saying, massive signal here. There is a clear fracture going on in Bitcoin. The fault line was always there, but the separation of the two separate circles on the Venn diagram has only recently gathered steam. The bear market is the forcing function where underlying conflict must be addressed as the equivalent of a hard fork in the community. There will be no bridging the schism back together, as has been the case with each Bitcoin fork in the past. Except the marking to market that ensues from here to permanently separate the two.
Look, this has always been the unspoken thing, right? If you speak out about grift and concerns you have over Saylor and his posse, like you will be cut out from the money printer that they control. And that's why most people do not speak out about this stuff. This is just another example of that. It's been obvious to anyone who's paying attention. Look at the fucking 100K party. It's like, you want to be invited to the 100K party. You want to be in the yacht, on the yachts. You want to be in the inside circle. You want to be making millions of dollars on the executive teams of these MSTR clones. Like, you just, you toe the line. Toe the line. Do not speak out. Say digital credit five times fast. And you get to make money.
Yeah. We don't toe the line here. You know where I want to be? I don't want to be on the yacht. I want to be home with my family, teaching the boys how to be productive, to work, to save the excess of that work in a hard money called Bitcoin, you know, helping new freaks navigate the news of the week. We got Zcash. A lot of people saying, oh, Bitcoin's not private. Zcash is better. Guess what?
Encrypted Bitcoin, bro. It's so far from being the same robustness and censorship resistance as Bitcoin. It's like not even fucking close.
Like the fact that they, I mean, you already said it, but like the fact that like three people were like, oh, we need the soft fork and like freeze. And
I mean, compare that to like all the BIP 110 knots, like anti-core stuff. You know, like core wasn't even able to do a policy change with like a massive schism and like uproar in the community. Wasn't even a fork. Compare that to this, just like in the overnight, in the middle of the night. And then they just send a tweet. Oh, by the way, we froze the pool. You can't send your money.
Yeah.
Billions of dollars. You just can't send it.
Well, I'm about to trigger the Monero bros too, but I don't care. And I think we've talked about this on the show before, but it was like a very terribly kept secret in New York back in like 2016, 2017. There was an inflation bug on Monero. People were exploiting the stack.
Was there?
Bitcoin with. I think, yeah.
I mean, you can.
There were people that were very confident, some of which that we both know. They told me they were exploiting it to buy more Bitcoin.
You can never prove it.
No, you can't.
That's the problem, right? Yeah. It's like Schrodinger's inflation bug.
Cue the Monero hate. This never happened. Just saying, I was talking to people who said it was happening and they were benefiting from it.
Source.
Me.
Source. That's one of my favorite memes, is the seagull.
Source
seagulls. On the topic of freedom money, our ride or die chat powered by Nostr, you can find in your favorite Nostr app, including Primal in your favorite app store. We have Soap Miner zapped 21,212 sats, Palindrome zap, Stay Humble Stack sats, and Soap Miner soap. At soapminer.com, use code RHR. Florida Justin zapped 41,114 sats. Big time zap, palindrome zap. Sats are on sale, staying humble about it. Handshake emoji. Ride or die freak Mav 21, 21,000 sats. Didn't say anything, nothing needed to be said. Respect. Thank you guys for supporting the show.
Yeah. Appreciate you guys. Next up on the list. News from Trezor has a response to the Tropico One chip disclosure, and they're saying there's no impact to your funds. And so Tropic Square collaboratively provided a Tropico One secure element chip to the Ledger Donjon team for an independent audit. The Donjon team later reported a successful laser fault injection attack against the chip, enabling extraction of a subset of secrets that protected the chip, which is used in the Trezor Safe 7. Building on Donjon's report, Trapid Square's engineering team identified a complex method to exploit this vulnerability and extract one more secret affecting Tropico One's PIN-related functions. What it means, your funds are safe. This vulnerability cannot give an attacker access to your PIN. Funds or wallet backup in the Trezor Safe 7, which has never been hacked. The response, users don't need to take any action. Trezor is disclosing this because of our commitment to radical transparency. We believe our open source approach makes the whole industry stronger.
I think this is actually kind of cool. So the Trezor Safe 7, first of all, is the hardware is like super nice build quality. Like, they've really outdone themselves on how nice this hardware is. I'm personally very impressed by it. It just feels like quality in hand. But it has two secure elements and a hardened CPU and MCU in it. So one of the secure elements is their own open source secure element, Tropico One. And then the other one is a closed source element, closed source secure element, like a classic secure element. And then, so you have to compromise both in order to pull the private keys off of the device. So in this case, only one was compromised. And then second of all, what I think is really cool about this is they took their open source chip and they sent it to Ledger and they were like, break this, like try and break this. And it's cool to see what is really, you know, two main competitors in the hardware wallet market. Like obviously we like ColdCard the best, but ColdCard is in terms of sales, it's like a small subset of users compared to the much larger user bases of Ledger and Trezor. And they basically were very collaborative here, which is pretty cool to see.
Yeah. I mean, shout out to the Ledger Don John team. I know Ledger gets a lot of shit for all the shit coins and some of their design decisions, but the Bitcoin and security team within Ledger is top notch.
The Don John team is fucking awesome. Just trying to hack things. Yeah. But like, I mean, same with like Trezor, like the reason Trezor and Ledger have all the users or most of the users is because they support all the shit coins, right? Yeah. They're both heavy shit coins. But yeah, so if you do need a shitcoin wallet though, I think the Trezor Safe 7 is fucking fantastic. Yeah. It's really impressive. The UX is awesome. The build quality is great. It works really well with its app.
And even if this attack was possible, I mean, it's one of those expensive laser attacks. They need physical access.
You need the device.
To your
device.
The whole
point is, yeah, first of all, with cold storage is that you require access to the physical device. And then second of all, the goal of these hardware wallet manufacturers is to make it as hard as possible to extract that seed out of the device, right? Trezor itself, I believe, is check for safe, right? And that's how I like to think about these things. Like you can almost think about it like your seed is a piece of paper inside a digital safe, right? That's how I always explain how like a cold card works, for instance. And so no matter what, you need physical access here. But like I said, you also need to break the other secure element while you're at it. But anyway, if you're not self-custodying right now, or if you're using an inferior hardware wallet, consider getting a cold card and using code RHR for some amount of discount.
I think it's
5% off, 10%.
Get yourself a Q. Pleb summer is over. It's orange tie season now. Bitcoin doesn't care. It's not.
It's real Bitcoin summer, bro.
It's a humble set stacking summer. We're getting back to basics here. Work on your craft, tune out the noise, increase your cash flow, reduce your expenses, buy some Bitcoin. Not financial advice, but that's what I'll be doing. Trying to do. All right, next on the list, Blockchain Association pushes law enforcement to pass the DAMCA, the DAMCA Act.
Okay. Did you see this?
I saw people talking about it, but honestly.
Did you see the tweet where they released it?
No.
They specifically bragged that they have 160 plus current and former spooks that have signed on to this letter to pass Clarity. I think this bill just needs to die. That's like the worst fundamental I've ever heard.
We're killing the bill. Look at these signatures. They're hideous.
But do you realize that? It's like it's all like national security personnel.
Yeah. It's like here we go. Dear Leader Thune and Leader Schumer. As former national security intelligence and law enforcement officials, we write in supporting of advancing the Digital Asset Market Clarity Act and establishing a modern federal framework in the United States for digital asset oversight, counter illicit finance efforts, and cybersecurity coordination. Digital asset activity is growing rapidly and globally. It is critical for the United States that this activity occurs under American rules with American oversight and subject to American law enforcement, or we risk it continuing to migrate offshore into opaque markets and beyond the reach of U.S. investigators. A clear federal framework strengthens U.S. national security by bringing more activity into regulated channels, improving visibility for law enforcement, and giving investigators and prosecutors stronger tools to combat financial crime. The Clarity Act expands law enforcement and financial crime prevention capabilities across the digital asset ecosystem. Among other provisions, the legislation expands the Bank Secrecy Act and sanctions compliance obligations to digital commodity brokers, dealers, and exchanges, including anti-money laundering program requirements and sanctions obligations. Creates a Treasury-led information sharing pilot program involving the DOJ, the FBI, the DEA, and private sector entities focused on illicit finance threats and emerging risks. Establishes a permanent interagency working group, including Treasury, Department of Justice, Department of Homeland Security, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the DEA. What does the DEA stand for again? The Drug Enforcement Agency, the Internal Revenue Service, and Secret Service to develop anti-money laundering and counter illicit finance. This is disgusting.
Read the titles of the signature. Just read some of them. Don't read all 100.
We got Carl Agnelli, former special agent in charge of the U.S. Secret Service. We got Ryan Boren, former special agent from the FBI New York field office. We got Jacob Baker, U.S. Secret Service, Global Investigator Operations Center. We got Lee Bresak, former federal prosecutor for the Department of Justice and Department of Treasury. We got Paul Bringer here, U.S. Army veteran. We got Mr. Matthew Cronin, the U.S. Department of Justice from 13 to 23, and House Select Committee on China from 23 to 24. We got Nish Chari, former counsel, World's First Bank of China, former counsel, Palantir Technologies, on the list.
Yeah, there's 160 of these. Don't keep reading them. But like, what a tell that this is not a good bill for us.
I know. Well, you had actually a great clip with Isabella where you're saying KYC AML is just a facade for tax.
It's all downstream of tax enforcement.
Yeah. So explain that here.
Well, I mean, the straw man is that if you want financial privacy, then you're avoiding your taxes. But that's bullshit. Most people that want financial privacy still pay their taxes. That's what like de facto criminalizes financial privacy. So when her question specifically was from a policy perspective, what's like the single best policy angle that like policy win that we could have that would, you know, improve the financial privacy situation. And it's tax reform. It's reforming the tax structure. So you don't have taxes that require intimate financial surveillance over all of your transactions to enforce. When they put a limit on Venmo transactions, so you have to report when you're a nanny or a waiter and you're receiving $600, like that is not to stop terrorism. That is to make sure that the plebs pay their full tax share. That's why it exists. And they just never say that part out loud. They always say it's terrorism, protecting the children, criminals, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, we should be doing the exact opposite of all this. Expands AML suspicious activity reports reporting, customer due diligence and compliance obligations to certain non-decentralized finance trading protocols not consistently covered under existing law.
And criminals get around all of this shit. It's not going to stop criminals. It's not going to stop terrorists. It just fucks over the average person.
Well, they fucking hid this too. Explicitly extend Section 311 Special Measures Authorities Digital Assets Activity. That's the Patriot Act. They don't even mention the Patriot Act in it. They just say Section 311.
They're aware enough.
Who's running the blockchain association?
Like crypto people, bro. This is one. Like I know Bitcoin Policy Institute isn't perfect, but like this is why they're needed. Because before Bitcoin Policy Institute, we didn't have anyone in DC that was on our side. Always the historic status quo. This is like the people that are paid by Coinbase and Ripple and shit.
I changed my mind. Cody Huffman is a former U.S. Army intelligence officer, artillery branch detail, 100% P&T disabled veteran. He signed this. I mean, we got to support our disabled vets. So, God damn it. Guess we got to kill the bill.
On the bright side, like I'm pretty sure it's not going to get passed regardless. So I don't know. Do you have to really go out of your way to kill this bill? I think they go on recess today. So
must be nice. I'd like a fucking recess.
Congress is on vacation like 300 of 365 days a year,
right?
Fucking
civil servants. going in to log their trades. What are we paying taxes for? What are we paying? What
to
are,
not
what
go are, to jail.
That's true.
That's why we pay our taxes.
It's a humiliation ritual.
Because I want to watch my kids grow up.
I do too. Is this the worst it's ever been? Like in terms of debt, tax slaves, like tax slavery, has it ever been worse? I don't think
This is definitely, I mean, right? Because like the fiat experiment is, we got off the gold standard once, I mean, actually before 71, but still, printing has only accelerated. And then on the financial surveillance side, like people forget, like the status quo was cash. Cash had great privacy. Now it's all digital. Everything's digital. Like Venmo didn't exist 20 years ago. Yeah. There's like a whole informal economy that runs on Venmo. Every transaction is tracked.
Yeah.
It's really hard to run a family and not have Venmo.
I know. I see two disparate comments asking me not to call Peak Clown World, and the other asking if I'm calling Peak tax slavery. I will not do that. I will not do that, just for all of our sakes.
Well, he's not saying Peak is different than all-time high, because we can be an open, we're in open water tax slavery right now.
Yeah, open water tax slavery is upon us, freaks. And guess what? If they pass the Clarity Act, it's only going to get worse. So yeah. May not have hit peak yet, but we are in open water tax slavery. They're coming for every dollar they can get. And you have democratic socialist gaining influence in the country and being more overt with the private property they want to seize from you. Open water tax slavery. That's a good one. I think we need to mean that. just lean into it. It's like, oh, give me more tax slavery, please.
Good times. I'm glad we're having fun staying poor.
Yeah, I am. Yeah, you got to have fun while you're staying poor. While you're tax slave, while you're on the tax slave farm, you might as well tell a few jokes and get a giggle in from time to time. You know, it's important for morale. Speaking of morale. Morale in the IRGC can't be too good right now, because economic fury targets Iran's largest digital asset exchange for terror finance and sanctions evasion. I was shocked this hadn't happened yet. Seems like a pretty low-hanging fruit if you want to.
I think it has been happening. They're just like releasing the press releases now. Right. Like you have, I mean, there was an interview with Besant late last week after RHR, which had to be intentional.
Oh, dude, everybody was jumping on it. Like, oh, my
where God. He's like, oh, we just grabbed their crypto. They didn't even know it was coming. I assume that was seized Tether specifically. Obviously, they can't just like press a button and seize Bitcoin. That's the whole point to Bitcoin. So it was probably mostly USD tokens, and probably a big section of that was Tether, just because USDC doesn't really have much market share abroad. And so that number he said was over $1 billion worth that they seized. It's been speculated for a long time that the Iranian government mines and uses Bitcoin. I saw some commentary that, you know, maybe part of our downward price action since the war began has been Iran selling Bitcoin for things they need, because their money's tied up everywhere else, which I think there's probably some credence to. I don't think like you should ascribe the entire 60K from all-time high on Iran selling Bitcoin. But there's probably a piece of truth there, a kernel of truth there.
Yeah. And the one comment that Besant made about like, yeah, some of them are going to wake up and not see
open their wallet
in their wallets.
They probably like, still think it's there.
What do you think they did? Do you think they like sort of remote hacked machines with private keys on them and took them, or just froze together?
I think it's probably a combination. I my guess would be, And it's interesting, right? Because this press release specifically names a bunch of exchanges that they added to the sanctions list, which obviously, like, even if you don't can't seize money, if you like block them off from traditional financial rails, that helps a lot in terms of making it more difficult for them to move and access their funds. But I think the overwhelming majority was like, press a button. We know Tether's been very outspoken that they have basically portals for the US three-letter agencies to like click a button and freeze Tether. And that it's easier than with the traditional financial system. Like with banks, you have to like send faxes and stuff to get them to do it. I'm sure Tether's portal is like incredibly clean UX, like very easy to freeze. So my guess is the majority was that. And then, yeah, there was probably offensive cyber ops, right? Where if there was hot wallets that they could access, that they would then like hack a phone, hack a computer and sweep them all at once. But you got to remember, like, Bessent has probably never sent a Bitcoin transaction. He doesn't understand exactly how crypto wallets work. So, like, I wouldn't, like, with a fine-tooth comb, like, try and decipher exactly what he meant when he said it. He means they open up their wallet and they can't access their money. That's what he means when he says that.
Yeah.
The actual technicals are probably are handled by other people.
Definitely. The nation's power, is he power bottom or power top? Scott Bessent. That's what we have to figure out. He was very sassy on Capitol Hill this week.
There was a great Bugle tweet, probably one of the best of all time. Gay Treasury Secretary Bessent on Bitcoin. I see every bottom as an opportunity to go all in.
So Bugle's calling him a power top then. There we go.
Yeah. He probably is. I mean, he gives off that aura.
Yeah. Yeah.
We have two zaps in the Ride or Die live chat. One is an NPub that is not showing me an NPub who's not showing me who it is. But is it
Telemetry?
Yeah, send 21K. Do you see who that is?
Yeah, it's Weird Robot. Telemetry, come rocket, telemetry, stay humble, stack sats.
And he sent 21,000 sats. Thank you, sir. Weirdo Robot, Ride or Die Freak. And Five zapped 42,000 sats. Monster Zap. Communities will rule Noster. Check out budobit.club. BUDOBIT.club.
BUDA.
And then I see another one. Phil Mustang zapped 21,212 sats.
Mantent Gazy. Humilde. Cabron.
That means stay humble in some language, right?
Maybe Portuguese. Mantenguese humilde cabron.
I love it. Thank you, freaks. I know I know everyone's feeling tight wallets right now. So the fact that you guys have outpoured your support with the best money known to man, true freedom money, Bitcoin, means a lot. Thank you, freaks.
I was told it's digital credit, though.
There are so many.
It's digital credit.
There's so many bad tweets that came out of Saylor's account. Like we turned Bitcoin into money. The great part about digital credit is it's neither credit nor digital. But fucking clown world shit.
It's digital capital. First, and then digital credit.
We turned Bitcoin into money. What the fuck are you smoking, bro?
Hey, we wouldn't be here without him. Show some goddamn respect. Bum.
Congratulations. You just got invited back on the yacht.
If I go on that yacht, I'll probably get thrown off at some point.
A boating accident.
You're like Goodfellas. I'm like, oh, I'm on the yacht. Speaking of somebody maybe in trouble, former Congressman George Santos is under investigation by the DOJ for insider trading on Kalshin, if I recall correctly. The details are that he basically bet that he wouldn't show up to the correspondence dinner.
Yeah.
And then, like he tweeted that he's going and then.
Yeah, it was worse. Yeah, it was worse than that. Yeah, that's exactly what he did. He tweeted that he was going. Bet against him not going, and then tweeted out, "Oh, I missed my flight. This sucks. I can't make it."
and made a bunch of fucking money on it. and by the way, I know I said earlier that we're like kind of an AI podcast. I guess we're like 70% Bitcoin, 20% AI, and 10% prediction markets. Like prediction markets and following the trends of prediction markets has definitely become a mainstay here at Rabbit Hole Recap. But this is just a wild.
How can you prove that this is insider trading and not just an unfortunate mishap? You know? This is the way the prediction market should work. It's like,
do you see the tweet? Watching the State of the Union from an airport TV was not part of the plan. Fuck my life. Yeah. Like, he thinks he's so clever.
I love how NPR frames this too. Watching SOTU from an airport TV was not part of the plan. FML. Santos wrote on X, using slang for a more coarse way of saying screw my life.
Boomers. And he did it on Kalshi, by the way, which is fully KYC'd.
Kalshi detected Santos trade, froze his account, and referred the case to the CFTC and the Department of Justice, which both opened investigations into Santos, according to two people familiar with Kalshi's investigation, who was not authorized to speak publicly. Neither the CFTC nor the Justice Department returned requests for comment. Kalshi declined to comment. Reached by NPR, Santos said, "Well, that's news to me," when asked about the insider trading probe underway. Santos said, "I'm not saying yes. I'm not saying no." I actually like the chutzpah on this guy is pretty impressive. He does not give a fuck.
Yeah. To remind people, prediction markets benefit insiders on the trading aspect, but they benefit outsiders on understanding what's going on in the world, right? And so you should always operate under this assumption. And you should definitely not be trading any prediction markets that a single person or a small group of people can influence. Because then, I mean, you're literally at their whim.
Yeah. But like, I mean, for this prediction market, like, I don't really care if George Santos was at the correspondence center or not. Information.
But that's what I'm saying. Like if you bet on that and you're not George Santos, you're fucking retarded.
Like, yeah, we need an Anthropic insider to let us know what's really going on with Mythos.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a way to incentivize leakers. And to be clear, like the part that I find fascinating and interesting is the benefit to outsiders, that there's an incentive for this information to leak in a credible way. The trading aspect is, you know, in a lot of ways, just another form of gambling.
Yeah.
You should just stay humble and stack sats instead.
Yeah. Well, staying on this, also know the risks that come with prediction markets, which is Oracle risk. And that was a big topic of discussion over the last week because many people were scammed out of what they believe should have been a winning bet because Polymarket basically ruled that MicroStrategy, they ruled for the contract. There was a contract. MicroStrategy sells Bitcoin by May 31st. Yes or no is the answer. If you bet yes, you were assuming like, hey, I won this bet. But because MicroStrategy didn't announce the sale of the Bitcoin until after May 31st, Polymarket's saying like the actual bet resolution is no.
I mean, they're going to get sued for this. This is not... In the most generous interpretation of this, it's a clear example that their platform is broken. And in a less generous, you know, version, it's like outright criminal. Saylor did sell Bitcoin before May 31st. And they ruled the opposite way. And by the way, freaks, this is something we've talked about in the past for years.
What incentive did they have to mark that the wrong way, though?
The main problem with prediction markets is something called the Oracle problem, which is how do you decide what is happening in real life in an accurate, objective way, right? Because these outcomes aren't digitally native. What was the weather on May 31st? Someone has to look outside and figure out what the weather is and report it. Like this stuff can't be native on-chain cryptographically verifiable, period. Now, there was an early prediction market called Augur that was very complicated that tried to solve the Oracle problem. And it wasn't effective at solving it. Then after Augur failed, Polymarket and Kalshi came up and they were like, we won't even solve the Oracle problem. We'll just offload that and have a relatively decent reporting mechanism that uses some other shitcoin protocol, like UMA, I think they call it, or something, to report on these things. And then ultimately there's like these UMA whales, and I don't understand exactly how it works, that is supposed to be reporting on these things.
Chainlink wants to be an Oracle system.
But like they never solved the Oracle problem. They just said, hold my beer, we can just do this without solving the Oracle problem piece.
Yeah.
And arguably it's probably unsolvable.
I mean, the Oracle problem, I would argue, is unsolvable, but there's a spectrum of trade-offs. I mean, if you're going to engage with these prediction markets or any market that depends on, or distributed market that depends on a third-party Oracle, I think an Oracle threshold, 2 of 3, 3 of 5.
That's what they're doing with UMA.
Are they?
So in this case, it was still gamed by whales, is my understanding. Now, to your point, I'm surprised you didn't say it because you were like the most bullish person on it ever.
DLCs?
With DLCs, what you can do is you can do a blinded Oracle, which is interesting, right? So in that situation,
the Oracle doesn't know what it's feeding information to.
So you still do like some kind of threshold. Maybe that's the best you can get. You'd still do some kind of threshold, you know, reputation-based 3 of 5 or something. And then you also make it blind so that they don't know which markets they're influencing.
Yeah, so they can't see like you've got 100 Bitcoin bets one way or the other.
Yeah, it adds a shit ton of fucking complexity. And when in the reality of the situation is like 98%, 99% of these markets settle quote unquote correctly, right? So like I do understand the pragmatism of just, you know, just saying, hold my beer and just doing it this way.
Yeah, but I still don't understand why they would, with this market particular, like what is the, it's not like it's.
Well, I mean, the conspiracy is that they had trades on the other side, right?
You got to eat that loss, brother. You're going to throw the baby out with the bathwater by trying to save that one bet. How much money was ultimately lost?
I mean, this one guy lost $500,000.
Yeah.
Now, what's interesting here is he did bet after May 31st. So the majority of his bet was June 1, after it was public information.
Well, their whole system is broke. How's that even fucking possible?
I know. That's the other thing. Like, why were
you shouldn't be allowed to bet after it. But like you should wait for SEC files to.
Yeah, there should be like a cool down period, right? Like there's like 2 weeks, 3 weeks.
This industry's so slapdick sometimes.
But I think part of it too is like, once again, if you're going to go on the generous interpretation, which I think is reasonably fair to go with, you know, Polymarket grew fast very quick. And there's all these.
It grew fast very quick.
See, you're not a professional. You didn't wait, so there's no clean cut. There's a bunch of edge cases, and if they actually care about the product and the users, they're refining things as the edge cases appear. Right? It's things that you might not necessarily think about until after it happens, and then you make sure they never happen again. Now, if it happens a second, a third, a fourth, a fifth time, you know, then I think they should get more shit. But there's just so many moving parts and all these markets are so very different. I mean, look at what was happening in the early days of the Iranian war, where it just like turned into assassination markets. And then it was like, is the Ayatollah actually dead or not? It's like, how do you rule that one?
No.
Well, Kalshi, and they ultimately ruled that one correctly. Yeah. Kalshi like rugged a bunch of people. But Polymarket ruled that one correctly.
I'm just like thinking of like Kalshi and Polymarket and prediction markets, Cypherpunk. I mean, they're in the arena. So you see the co-founders of Kalshi talk, and then you see Shane talk, and it's like, aren't these the people really to build these markets? We need some, like, I want the guy.
The picture of the guy from the Pirate Bay in his room with like the long beard, he's skinny as fuck, he's emaciated, he's got all the books. Like, that guy needs to build the prediction market.
Not I don't
these,
know, like,
not these Wall Street bros.
I mean, Shane is not a Wall Street bro. I mean, now maybe he is. Like, he built the thing out of his apartment. He got raided by the Biden administration.
He's an Upper West Side kid. He's an Upper West Side kid.
Okay, but still, like, he was still like a young kid that took significant risk. And like, I'm sensitive about this shit, right? Just like, people like critique OpenSats or 1031 all the fucking time. It's like, well, why don't you go build something better? And like, he deserves credit for like going out and doing the thing while everyone wanted to throw him in jail for it.
I'm being a curmudgeon here. You're right. But ideally, in my mind, I want that guy from Pirate Bay.
Oh, no, I agree. And maybe we'll see it. There's early days. I think Polly and Kalshi kind of showed that there's significant demand for this type of thing. And there will be others. I expect there to be others.
Yeah. I do as well.
Exciting especially time. For the fringe markets, right? Like, the most interesting markets, like, probably will not be traded on a, you know, a $10 billion plus platform that have known actors running it.
There probably already is like some dark web prediction markets that we don't even know about. Okay. Hidden deep in Tor onion routing servers.
Two zaps, Decoy Owl Zap, 21,000 sats. Shout out to Timmy Two Shoes for being my best man. Thank you, Timmy Two Shoes. The Commoner zapped 21,112 sats. Palindrome zap. Entropy Fighters, exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point.
Shout out to the Commoner. And he didn't zap us, but he makes a good point. Like, BIP300 would solve all these prediction market problems. We just need on-chain hash rate prediction markets, you know.
Okay, we got the clean cut. Stop being ridiculous.
We just need merge mine hash rate prediction markets. It's coming. Callback to what we were discussing earlier with the Clarity Act. I mean, we were being a bit, I don't want to say glib, but like, God, open water tax slavery is here. They're going to say terrorist financing, all that. The law enforcement needs to be able to track you. It's all downhill from tax compliance. And then we have what's going on in Oslo this week, which is the Human Rights Foundation Oslo Freedom Forum. Ed from our team is there, has been reporting on it on the ground, reporting back to me. Incredible event, but highlights the juxtaposition of what we were discussing earlier with the Clarity Act and all the law enforcement being like, yes, expand the Patriot Act, expand the surveillance, hoover up all the information so that we have a financial surveillance dragnet that the Gestapo would blush at, would blush over. And then you have the freedom fighters who, if the U.S. government gets its way and becomes the surveillance dragnet and shares information with governments that it deems to be convenient partners, people that are fighting for freedom in some of these countries can have that information exposed and completely rugged by the surveillance state. And I think one thing I personally respect out of HRF, which is a partner sponsor of the show, we do not have a financial freedom report this week for obvious reasons. Our team is occupied in Oslo, but they get a lot of flack. They're an NGO. A lot of people don't agree with everything that they cover. Sometimes I don't agree with stuff that they cover, but I think at the core of it, what they really do focus on is freedom tech and enabling individuals, obviously with a focus on activists, but individuals more broadly with tools that protect and enable self-sovereignty in the digital age.
Yeah, I mean, they've Alex Gladstein and his team have done great work throughout the years, and they throw a great event. They obviously have a pro-US bias. Everyone has a bias. Just be aware of it. Oslo Freedom Forum is an event that I've been to many times in the past. Fantastic event. In the show notes, we've linked, and I'm just trying to cut down travel right now to focus on family, which is why I'm not there right now. But in the show notes, we linked their YouTube. You know, if you have some free time, go peruse the different talks that have happened there. They always have really great conversations. Just to be clear,
they have a whole separate freedom tech track that has historically been focused on Bitcoin. And now there's also an open source AI element to it. That usually takes a little bit longer to get uploaded. When I checked, there was like six or so talks there. But if it was anything like the last few years, my guess is, you know, there'll be like 30 different videos that get uploaded over the next week or so. So just keep an eye on it.
Hell yeah. And with that, we're going to move to software updates. But before that, we got to read the boost from Rabbit Hole Recap 411 audit Fort Knox.
Oh, I forgot about that. Trump must have listened to RHR because he tweeted social post about auditing Fort Knox the day after. Did you see that?
I thought that was why that was the, I thought that's why
no,
we made it.
It happened after our show.
They're listening, man. They're listening.
How cool is that?
That's pretty dope. President Trump, if you're listening this week, just kill the bill, brother.
We name our episode Audit Fort Knox, and then all of a sudden the President of the United States reminds everyone that we should audit Fort Knox. I mean,
is it going to happen?
Can't make that up. No, definitely not. And he's probably just gaslighting us and doesn't actually want to audit Fort Knox, but the point stands. Okay.
But. One boost to read from 411 audit Fort Knox from T-Dub, 21,012 sats palindrome boost. Great rip. Convince your portfolio companies to adopt silent payments. We'll be on it.
Yeah, we're working on that, obviously. And also PayJoin.
PayJoin. Yeah, we talk about PayJoin as well. So I think that's a massive unlock for efficiency gains. We need to make sure our portfolio companies are being efficient with their on-chain footprint and how much fees they're spending to transact in Bitcoin. So like PayJoin makes that transaction batching significantly cheaper. So believe me, it's top priority for us.
Saves a lot of money in transaction fees. Top zap on primal.net/RHR on our hashed and signed videos that get posted there after we go off air is Ride or Die Freak roaming with 21,000 sats, asteroid emoji. Still trying to tell us something. Love to see it.
Yeah. Soap Miner saying the CIA listening to your pod is not a good thing. Yes, it is. You know what? They've got to hear it. They got to hear the other side. You know how many CIA agents we've converted over the years who've listened
to the show?
At least one. They've listened to the show. They've hit pause on their podcast player, their YouTube. They've poured a glass of whiskey and they've sat silently in the corner of their room saying, what am I doing with my life? Am I on the right side? Am I the baddie? And then they drop out and they come on the good side. There's been dozens of those people. Okay. So Miner, so we do.
I've met at least one of them.
Yeah. We get the CIA agents to begin asking, am I the baddie? That's what this show does.
I think I told the story on air, but he was like, yeah, I used to work for the agency. And I just like froze up. Was like, which agency?
We plant Am I the Baddie seeds inside the government. Fifth column, pirate radio we've got here. Okay, boys. Sack up.
I mean, Soap Miner, who are you to talk? Like, I bet you CIA agents have ordered soap from you with code RHR.
Yeah. Yeah, who do you know? They're like,
you're welcome.
Maybe they're taking your soap and they're the FBI. This is an FBI thing. They're taking your soap and then they're convincing some highly autistic 17-year-old to try to like turn it into a bomb like they did in Fight Club. And you're somehow
entrapment.
Yeah. I kid. What I'm not kidding about is that there is actually good developments happening in the Bitcoin tech space. We've been following this as it's progressed, but Calais gave an update earlier this week, a huge milestone. Actually, it was last week after we recorded. Huge milestone for Cashew. After 3 years of work, we finally have unruggable mints. I'm testing the first on-chain Cashew mint running inside a trusted execution environment where the mint keys are generated entirely within the enclave and remain unknown to the operator. That means the operator cannot inflate the eCash supply and cannot access the Bitcoin reserves backing it. We've moved from trusting operators to relying on hardware and forced cryptographic guarantees. There's still work to do, but the path forward is clear. This is an incredible, exciting step toward trust minimized, eCash.
I mean, this could be absolutely massive. So as most freaks are probably aware, Cashew offers very easy UX, convenient and cheap, which is what you want to see. We've seen time and time again that most people will not choose things because they're private or freedom oriented. They will choose it because they're convenient and cheap. So Cashew nails that. But the negative with Cashew has been that you have implicit trust in the operator, the person running the Cashew Mint. It's effectively custodial. They can rug you just outright, like a classic exit scam. But what's even more insidious is they can do a undetectable inflation rug for our last conversation, where they're slowly rugging you and you just don't even realize. This attempts to solve both. It also has an interesting side effect, which historically Cashew has been natively Lightning. You can only do Lightning in and out. This is on-chain, which I think is much more interesting because you could do very large amounts and not have to deal with any kind of liquidity. I think in a lot of ways it can be much more useful for people, or at least complementary to Lightning-based Cashew Mints. And the operator cannot rug you, period. Now, the person or company that's operating the TEE, the server, could potentially take the whole thing offline and you won't have access to your money. So a trade-off still remains, but they can't take the money. They can just stop you from having your money.
So I've been thinking on this a lot, just because I don't think he's gone into too many technical details, but from the way I understand this may work, it's like, so you have the TEE and the enclave, and you're basically just, what I assume is you bake the creation and burning mechanism for eCash tokens commensurate with Bitcoin sent to the mint into the logic on the enclave, yeah. And you don't touch it.
Yeah. So like a TEE is a secure enclave in the cloud, right? So that handles all of the eCash creation and the keys. But there's the two trade-offs, right? You have to trust the cloud for uptime. And to be clear, like it could just be forever downtime, right? Like it could just turn off and never turn back on. And then the second piece is, it means like you cannot do updates. Like you can't, if there's a code issue, you can't do what Zcash did and freeze it, force fix it, and unfreeze it. It's just, the bug will always be there. So they're being very deliberate and very careful. I spoke to Callie privately. He's very proud of his team. Like this was thought as something that was nearly impossible to do, and they've cooked it up in less than a year. Like it's been like on a 6 month time frame. But they're going to have to be very careful before they release it, because, like I said, you can't make changes on the fly afterwards. Yeah. So I would view this as like complementary to the current Cashew ecosystem. I don't think it completely obsoletes the trusted Cashew setups that already exist. It's supplementary or complementary, however you want to look at it.
And could you do it like a reproducible build where you can sort of cryptographically prove that the logic of the creation, yes, and burning of the eCash tokens is what you think it is?
Yeah, you have cryptographic guarantees. That's the whole point. That's why it's trust minimized. Yeah. Pretty fucking cool. I mean, this could be absolutely massive. Obviously, it doesn't require soft fork, which in our time in Bitcoin, if you're expecting to have a fork for anything, like you should just not. Bitcoin defaults to no change. That's, you know, a foundational element to the value prop of Bitcoin. Once again, to use Zcash as our example, if you can change it on the fly and you can easily change the protocol, then it can be changed for the negative and you can get rugged by a change. So that's a feature, not a bug. But as a result, it's important for people, I think, to ground themselves in reality and not expect specific changes on Bitcoin to add certain features that maybe they find helpful that other stakeholders don't. So this is really fucking cool because we could have very strong privacy, in very large amounts with very good trust minimization without a soft fork. Really fucking cool to see.
And it could have Lightning capability too. So you could have, or automatically, well, if it's interacting with other mints, will have a Lightning gateway?
I don't know. That's a separate piece, because you would effectively, there's a reason they're doing it on chain, right? Because you would effectively need to invent a way or figure out a way to have like an autonomous Lightning node, which is a very difficult task, if not impossible to do. I don't know how you would do that.
Arc.
Because all these Lightning gateways is effectively, when you say Lightning gateway, it's a person running a Lightning node. That's not you. Like, they're managing liquidity. They're doing all that shit. It'd be hard to do. Now, yeah, you could have, I mean, this is where it could get interesting with like certain swap situations, right? Like you just mentioned Arc or Spark. You could have like situations where you swap into something else from on-chain, from your on-chain cashew mint, and then you end up paying an invoice on Lightning or receiving an invoice from Lightning. And UX-wise, the user could feel like it's native, right? But obviously at that point where the Lightning stuff is happening, it becomes trusted.
Yeah, I'm trying to think through this. First time I'm hearing all this. I'm just thinking like eCashMint, like on-chain transaction, UTXO into one of these TEE mints, you get eCash, commensurate amount
it's
of
the
eCash
same thing.
Created and issued no, to said. You. Like if you're going like mint to mint.
Yeah, but then you're just trusting the new mint. Like once I said, once
yeah, you want but like I'm trying to think of the payment UX. Like, is it instantaneous eCash to eCash, mint to mint, or does Lightning Gateway not enable that? Do you need a Lightning Gateway to get to another mint?
No, so that, I
like,
mean,
how do you scale like, this? Like, everybody would have to be on this TEE mint to pay each other, right?
No, I think you would have providers that would take the eCash and they would basically send via Lightning. But okay. You would have the trust there in that situation.
Yeah.
It could be effectively instant, right? But at the end of the day, if you want the Lightning functionality, there needs to be someone running a Lightning node.
Yeah.
And then specifically, there has to be someone running a Lightning node that is willing to trust this, you know, secure element mint, right? Because they're getting that eCash token. And so they want to make sure that eCash token is actually like worth something to them. But what's really cool here is then they could presumably immediately withdraw on chain and really reduce their risk on like that server going down, right? Yeah. They could accept, you know, a bunch of these eCash tokens and then immediately withdraw a transaction on chain. And then they're pretty much only at risk of the main risk there is that the server goes down before they do the withdrawal transaction. Mm-hmm. And I think what we'll see is we'll probably see, you know, it's kind of a Lindy effect, right? It's like, as some of these mints get spun up, like the longer they're operating and the longer the VPS provider isn't fucking shutting them down, the more trust people will have in those specific mints. The reputation will kind of build over time.
To what degree does this alleviate the who will run the mints problem?
I think it does significantly.
Yeah.
Right? Because the operator is really no longer an operator. Now, it does offload some risk onto
somebody VPS providers. Like the only risk I can see is like they come back to you, like you hit the launch button.
Yeah, but I mean, I think you can do that. You can do that pretty privately. I think the bigger risk, once again, is like, especially if they get larger, just the VPS just turning it off, like the server provider turning it off, right? Mm-hmm. But it's a different risk. And I think the server provider, first of all, if you run cloud servers, like legal liability is through the roof on a bunch of like your whole entire operations. Like if someone's doing something illegal on your servers, like that's an issue. But it's also a lot more defensible for them, I think, because they can't take the money because they aren't a traditional cashew operator, right? So I think the legal basis that you would go after one of these cloud providers for running one of these blind mints, or all mints are blind, but running one of these, you know, trust minimized mints is a much more difficult legal case than going after a classic cashew mint operator. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Uh-oh. We got breaking news. Anthropic.
Right. Is this also 15 hours old?
It's 2 hours old. 2 hours and 15 minutes. Anthropic, our internal data shows Claude is accelerating AI development, a possible path to recursive self-improvement and AI autonomously building a more capable successor.
it's happening faster than we thought, and the implications deserve greater attention.
That's not breaking news. That's just them fundraising.
Today, Anthropic engineers on average ship 8x more as much code per quarter as they did compared to 21 to 25. The speed up isn't just in volume. In open-ended coding programs where answers are unclear, Claude's success rate is now 76%, a 50-point jump in just 6 months. Many engineers also say Claude's code quality is now on par with human code. We expect it to be better within the year. Each time that we release a model, we run the same tests, give it code that trains a small AI model, ask the new model to speed it up. It takes a skilled human 48 hours to reach 4x faster.
So what are you reading this?
Claude Opus averaged 3x speed up this April. Mythos preview achieved 52x.
Like I said, this is
Skynet is here, boys. Doesn't matter.
There's no doubt in my mind that AI shit is accelerating. There is obviously at some point these tools will, at least at the surface level, if not already, be self-improving. So I think one way to think about it is like, you know, if AI can replace 1,000 AI researchers and do it itself, then obviously things will accelerate. But then also Anthropic is has a massive record of releasing press releases that are effectively just trying to fundraise, and they make very grandiose claims. And they just recently, since the last RHR, filed for their IPO, which, by the way, they did confidentially, so we don't know their numbers yet, which I think is an interesting aspect there. So we still don't know. My understanding is we don't know the hard numbers behind the business yet, but they're clearly rushing to get to IPO. Obviously, SpaceX is going to be first, and then presumably OpenAI will be a fast follow after Anthropic. My guess is why they were confidential about it is because you're basically like giving OpenAI a free call option if they can see your numbers. Like if OpenAI's numbers are significantly better than Anthropic, then they're just going to drop their IPO filing right on top. Yeah. And if it's not, then they'll wait until they are. So they didn't want to give them that free call option. So I wouldn't like think anything malicious behind that aspect. But just keep in mind that they're rushing to dump on retail like as quick as possible. And so expect these press releases to,
I mean, it's a very interesting marketing strategy. Our product is going to kill everybody. Give us money.
Well, they've actually toned that back a bunch, like Dario specifically, because, I think that helps with raising from private capital, but like, if you want the general public to buy your bags, like you shouldn't tell them like they're all going to be jobless and dependent on the AI.
And Skynet is here.
So they've been pulling back on that narrative. But yeah, historically they're just like, it's going to kill you all. That's why you need us to do it. And I think part of that is also not just fundraising. Like it's a classic regulatory capture play. They want to pull the ladder out from behind them. They don't want more competitors. It was something that worked really well during the Biden administration. They were, you know, on the approved list of AI that could work. It's something that these effective altruists, which is what the cult group that both Dario and SBF belong to, have a tendency to do. It's one of their key strategies. I mean, SBF did it all the time on the crypto side, trying to get regulatory capture. But yeah, I think it's not as effective of a strategy at this point, and they just follow their incentives, right?
Yeah. More on that. Maybe we'll be able to autonomously run the show starting next week if the acceleration, if they're getting faster at a faster rate, maybe we'll be able to do this autonomously. You'll never know. You will never know, but you will know that we're still here. It's not autonomous yet, and Core Lightning version 26.06 has been released. Looking for the big call outs. Nothing too crazy here.
What about the name of the release?
Quantum Resistant Lightning Channel. Oh. How do they do this?
I think that's like
troll. That's
more of a troll than anything. They like doing that. Creative names for their releases.
Who's on this? Shout out to you, Christian Decker, Rusty Russell.
all you guys for contributing to Core Lightning. Albi Hub version 1.22.2 has been released. Mark Horowitz version. In this release, Albi Hub adds a new AI and agents page, an integrated on-chain wallet mode, custom user labels for transactions, redesigned setting pages, blah, 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 blah. Agent pages are here.
What is the reasoning for the name?
No idea. Is there anything in the README? I'm not seeing anything. Going to keep it moving. Sparrow Wallet version 2.5.2 has been released. Our favorite desktop wallet has improved verification of loaded PSBTs to warn on non-default SIG hash types, warn on loading transactions with non-zero outputs, and improved bit 375 verification on pre-computed SP outputs and PSBTs, among other things. Go check that out. Nostr VPN version 4.0.48 has been released. Android now restores the VPN from OS always on VPN and boot/startup restore. Looks like a bunch of Android fixes here. And Mac OS launcher icons have more padding, so the render less tightly cropped across launchers and system surfaces. Little design upgrade there. Last but not least, Tails. Haven't talked about Tails in a while. Version 7.8.1. has been released, and I imagine because there's an emergency release, and it is, there's a serious security vulnerability in the Linux kernel, as well as security vulnerabilities in the Tor client. So if you're running Tails, probably want to upgrade.
And I wouldn't be surprised if this was found through AI pen testing.
Yeah.
But they don't, I don't think they say that.
Linux kernel CVE-2026-43503 vulnerability that could allow an application in Tails to gain administrative privileges. Would that matter?
Would what matter? Gaining administrative privileges?
But Tails is like an operating system. Linux, you plug it in, like...
I mean, you don't like that's like number one key. Yeah, it does. It uses Tor by default. Yeah. Of course, it touches the internet. I mean, you can use it without the internet. But like one of the key elements of InfoSec is you don't want an attacker to have admin privileges on your machine because then they can do everything. This is a very critical update, which is so if you do use Tails, make sure you update ASAP.
Yeah. All right. That's all we got. What should we wrap up with here?
I didn't put it in a list, but just an example of one of the small but helpful improvements that the Strike product team continues to ship is we shipped like phishing protection for emails. So a lot of people have had their email addresses leaked separately from Strike and but they use the same email for Strike. And so there have been, you know, like the Ledger list, for instance, like Ledger had 1 million emails leaked. If you use the same email, with Ledger that you did with Strike, you might, sometimes they, as Strike has become more popular, they'll send emails that look like they're coming from Strike. So there's these, we provide these phishing words now that you can look up in the app. And so if an email doesn't have the same words and numbers that you see in your app, then you know it's not an actual email from Strike. I thought that was kind of a cool, pragmatic product update. As we said in the past, if you're not a Strike user, use code RHR to sign up. And you get $500 off your trading fees.
You get and then no trading fees for the first $500 of trading.
There you go. And then if you do auto stacking from that point forward and auto withdrawal, you never have to pay a fee, period. So build for the stackers out there to stack real Bitcoin.
Guys, 100 million humble sat stackers. We're trying to kill fiat, okay? We're not trying to immerse ourselves in fiat via digital credit, you know? We need humble sat stackers stacking, getting a balance,
moving it to Cold Card. Matt had the Trezor. We got BitKeys. We got hardware wallets. We just need to get back to the basics. We're in open water tax slavery, freaks, and you need to break out some way. And Bitcoin is a tool to fight back against the ever encroaching arm of open water tax slavery, where the governments can print as much money in conjunction with the central banks and issue as much debt and brute force these surveillance dragnets on you. We need to let them know, hey, we've got this alternative here. I prefer this thing. I'm going to stay humble. I'm going to stack sats. I'm going to sweep the cold storage and prepare for Skynet, because it's coming. Anthropic just told us.
Love you, freaks. Focus on what's important. Stay humble, stack sats.
Peace and love.